Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
New Scientist, 4th of August 2018. This is a comment by Matthias Wackenagel. What a fantastic name. It's called The Day of Reckoning. Earth Overshoot Day is a hugely popular way to highlight our global environmental impact. Here are two views on it. Now, this is really gets on the dilemma, because we can create a scientifically flaky but marketable idea which gets out there, but then it's flaky and then it falls apart. So there's things like the hole in the ozone layer, Earth Overshoot Day. So basically Earth Overshoot Day is by modelling what the planet can produce and what we are producing as a ratio. That's a ratio of the day which we're actually using resources too much, and we're using, so after, before the Earth's overshoot day, it's okay. Then after the day, where each thing we use is actually wrecking the planet, as we're borrowing from the planet. That's an idea, and we'll just go through it. Charles Ponzi is unfairly blamed for the Ponzi scheme, a scam in which you rob Peter to pay Paul. Yet another gender's bias in history. It's yet another gender bias in history, because the fraudster Sarah Howe predated Ponzi at least by 40 years, swindling Boston ladies. So essentially, it's, yeah, I really wish I knew what a Ponzi scheme was, but I'll have to have a look. Later, Bernie Madoff took the Ponzi crown. He relied on new investment to provide returns to early investors, taking from the future to pay the present. In fact, even Madoff has been outdone. Our current economies are running on the largest Ponzi scheme ever. We're using the Earth's future resources to power the present activities. Currently, humanity consumes the planet's natural resources more quickly than the Earth can replenish them. Debt balloons will eventually burst. Our ecological debt shows up as carbon in the atmosphere, collapsing fish stocks, shrinking forests, eroding soils, and drying up groundwater. Let me be more precise and give you the numbers. That's what ecological footprint accounting was designed for. These accounts are the most pedestrian science you can imagine. For objectivity, they use the UN data. They build on the premise that the Earth's ability to renew its resources is the most limiting material factor for human economy. The accounts add up demands of biologically productive space, given our needs for food, timber, carbon sequestration, and room for infrastructure. The sum of this demand is called humanity's ecological footprint. It's now at 20.9 billion hectares, but those surfaces of our planet that can provide biocapacity amounts to 12.2 billion hectares. In other words, we're 9 billion hectares short. This means that humanity is currently using up 1.7 times faster than ecosystems replenish, akin to using 1.7 Earths. This excessive demand can be turned into a date. The Earth Overshoot Day, essentially. It's the date humanity has used as much of the planet's ecosystems can handle without going into the red. In 2018, it falls on the 1st of August, the earliest so far. Currently, carbon emissions are 60% of our footprint. At 50 years ago, that was negligible. 150 years ago, it was negligible. If we want to live up to the Paris Agreement, the carbon footprint should be zero gain before 2050. While apparent is finite, human possibilities are not. The transformation to a sustainable carbon-neutral world will succeed if we apply our greatest strengths, foresight and innovation. This is not only technologically possible, it's also economically beneficial, and our best chance of a prosperous future. If we move back Earth Overshoot Day by 5 days per year, we should shift from 1.7 Earths to below 1 before 2050. It's not too hard. Ponzi schemes are bound to come to a end. Sorry, it's just reading this page here. Sorry, you podcast victims. And the question is whether by design or disaster. I prefer design, but it requires honest accounting and resolve. Most countries say Ponzi schemes are illegal, so what are we waiting for? It's a good, well put forward article. Now, this one is by Fred Pierce. Welcome to Earth Overshoot Day, the date when humanity exceeds the resources of our planet and can provide in a year. For the next 5 months, we are in eco debt. Well, kind of. There is no problem with the assertion that we are trashing the planets. We surely are. But I contend the science behind the overshoot day is not a good measure of our use of the planet's resources. It's a dysfunctional proxy. The analysis sets out to compare our consumption of resources with nature's ability to renew them. It's biocapacity. But the central problem lies in trying to measure our ecological footprint in terms of the size of the planet. The analysis assesses biological capacity around 12 billion hectares. But it finds that we will use up the supply by the 1st of August. In 2018, we will need a biocapacity of 1.7 planets. Rather obviously, we don't actually have 1.7 planets, so the logic goes we are drawing down the natural capital of the only one we have. This is our Earth. But individual parts of the analysis are troublesome. We can calculate whether we fell more trees than nature can grow. It uses UN data, which finds out the forest's growth outstrips loss. How about cropland and pasture? These are harvested, not consumed. The question whether we over-harvest, creating deserts and eroding soils. Global Footprint Network, GFN, which does the calculations, admits that no collection of data on annual soil loss exists. So it's an estimate of cropland and pasture use is just a measure of hectares of such land, essentially identical to biocapacity. Again, no overshoot. It's not GFN's fault, but surely negates what people think the analysis is intended to do. Even so, we have an overshoot overall. How come? The answer lies in the final part of the calculation, climate change. This cannot be measured in hectares, so the metric is a proxy hectare to forests needed to soak up the carbon dioxide accumulating in the atmosphere. GFN puts this around 8 billion, or a bit over half the Earth's land surface. These virtual forests don't exist, which is why the climate is changing. But without them, the analysis would give a 30% undershoot. Okay. None of my criticisms deny the importance of climate change, nor the poor state of ecosystems. In many respects, the things are far worse than the overshoot analysis suggests. Soils are being eroded fast, biodiversity is suffering, mismanagement of water is emptying lakes and rivers, and polluting oceans. The trouble is, none of these can be measured in hectares, and none are in the overshoot analysis, which I suggest is not fit for purpose. And unfortunately, that Fred Pierce is very close to me. I'm a quantum physicist who've dealt with the ozone layer, and my general thing is that I think at the end of the day, good PR and bad science has its problems that we should be able to discuss and not be pilloried. Okay, we're 8 minutes in. An article by Claire Wilson, 4th of August 2018, The Scientific Guide to Hoarding Food. Water, baked beans, shotguns. Many people occasionally wonder what they should stockpile to prepare for the collapse of civilization, but don't get around to doing anything about it. It's usually the kind of idle speculation that occurs after watching one too many zombie movies. But now the question has become somewhat more pertinent for people in the UK, where the government has announced it's taking steps to make sure the country has enough food if there is no deal Brexit. Prime Minister Theresa May said last week that people should be, quote, comforted by the news. Of course, the UK has some experience in limited food supply. Rationing began during Second World War and lasted until the mid-1950s. But why rely on the government? If you want to stockpile it for yourself, let science guide the way. For your basic apocalyptic scenario, your main concern would be stockpiling enough calories without taking up too much space. Dried foods such as whole grain rice, porridge and lentils are an easy way to store discreetly. Quote, lentils and rice is a staple diet for hundreds of millions of people. They take up no space and essentially never go off, says Lewis Dartnell, the author of The Knowledge of How to Rebuild Your World from Scratch. Even the worst-case Brexit outcome, though the risks is not so much that the UK may have no food at all, but rather the stuff that comes from Europe will be subject to shortages or price increases. About 30% of UK food is imported from the European member states, and another 10% comes from countries the UK has trade deals with by virtue of being in the EU. This covers a wide range of food types: fruit, vegetables, eggs, cheese, pork, beef, chicken. Lamb is the exception, coming mainly from the British or New Zealand farmers. The UK is especially reliant on Europe for fruit and veg in winter. The UK climate does not allow much to grow between December and early March, other than potatoes, leeks, root vegetables and brassicas, which I suppose is broccolis and stuff. Obviously, most fresh fruit from vegetables cannot be stored for very long. One option for anyone keen on getting their fiver a day, it would be to stock up on canned produce. But Alex Richardson of University of Oxford said frozen fruit and vegetables will be better because they have more nutrients. If you must stockpile, it might be worth investing in a chest freezer, she says. And speaking of nutrition, you probably shouldn't forget your omega-3 fatty acids. The best source is fish. Here we shouldn't turn up our noses at cans, such as tinned mackerels, pilchards and salmons. Tuna has been tinned in water. It is okay, but the kind tinned in vegetable oil has little omega-3 left. Oh, that's interesting. All the stockpiling, not to mention buying a second freezer, would be less possible for poorer households, of course. The food consequences of a bad Brexit will inevitably be more of a threat to those at lower incomes, who may already be struggling to feed their families. Supermarkets have estimated that if the UK crashes out of Europe without a trade deal, the fall back to the World Trade Organization tariffs would bump up the prices of European food by an average of 22% from the families. For some families, that would be no joke. And here's a picture here of a boy with a flamingo on his back, on his seat. And there's another small picture of a person driving for flamingo. Star attraction. I'll do this. No wonder this child is clamoring to touch Bob, the tame flamingo. He's become a local superstar of the Caribbean island of Curacao, which I sort of know about because I think it's a Dutch one, after injuring himself and flying into a window of the island's Hilton Hotel and collapsing unconscious in the swimming pool. Odette Duos, the local vet, treated Bob for concussion and has since kept him at a wildlife rehabilitation centre she runs as part of her charity. Fundachondier de Oudewich de Caribbean, so it is Dutch colony. Since the crash, Bob's life has been transformed as he is now ambassador for the charity. Dust takes him to schools to meet children and reinforce her message about the importance of protecting the island's wildlife and the fragile habitats upon which it depends. The island supports at least three large populations of wild flamingos. The main picture shows Bob's visit earlier this month to the A.E. Golo School in Willemstad, Cocos capital city. The photograph below shows Bob en route to one of his many celebrity engagements. And so that ends this episode. The next episode is Trouble from the Deep. We've just raised the Arctic's churn. That could make the future weather even more extreme, finds Michael Marshall. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.